our barracks, and everybody wrote their wills out. And then we went in for supper that night. Mm-hmm. And the sergeant's mess, I suppose, was built to accommodate maybe 300 or 400 sergeants. Now with all the aircrew lot there, it was holding about 1,000 or more aircrew, but more sergeants. So the lineup of sergeants was gigantic. You went all the way around the block and came back into the dining hall. The entrance was a big glass case mailbox.
Okay.
Full. And he got good Aussie humour across the front, dead uns. In other words, this was mail for people who had died. And it was full.
Oh, wow.
Who had been killed on, mostly on the big Berlin trips. Well, that was all a bit sobering to start with, anyhow. Anyhow, the other crews went on leave. Mm-hmm. And we stayed. And in that first week that we were at Binbrook, mm-hmm. we did some training flights, and we did our first op. When I say we, it's not quite true. I went on what's known as a second dicky trip. In other words, two pilots, one experienced pilot and me, and I think... most of my crew came too, with the exception of the navigator. His crew was sick with the flu or something. Mm-hmm. So it was my crew, Flight Sergeant McCleary, mm-hmm. and myself. It was to bomb a marshalling yard at Orléans, at Rouen in France. And there was just nothing to it. We hardly saw a searchlight. We didn't see any anti-aircraft fire. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this is money for old rope. Mm-hmm. We got back to base, and McCleary asked for permission to land and was told to orbit at 2,500 feet, because there were several other crews ahead of him. So
okay.
We orbited the aerodrome 2,500 feet. Then we told to come down to 2,000 feet, and a bit later to 1,500 feet. Then we told to prepare to land.
Mm-hmm.
And he just called out that we were on what's known as the downwind leg. In those days, we didn't do as modern airliners do, just come straight in and straight on the land. You came back to the airport, flew around it like that until you got on the downwind leg, one more turn, one more, and then you landed. Well, the aircraft immediately in front of us, we all had our lights on, the aircraft immediately in front of us suddenly went up an enormous ball of fire.
Mm-hmm.
Two Ju-88s night fighters had come back with the stream with us, unknown to us. They shot down one aircraft immediately in front of us. They shot down another aircraft, well, they didn't shoot it down, but they killed some of the crew in an aircraft that was what's known as in the funnels. In other words, a funnel of lights that lead you onto the runway.
Okay.
And there's one aircraft actually on the runway slowing down, and they killed a couple of the crew members there, raped you with machine gun fire, and two members were killed. So that was a good start to my naive thinking, well, this is a piece of old cake. Anyway, the following 5 days later, I see.
Mm-hmm.
6 days later.
Mm-hmm.
My name came up on the battle order with my crew to fly to Essen. That was my first, as captain of the aircraft, first bombing experience. Well, Essen really was one of the hottest targets. You had to fly all the way down through the Ruhr. There were searchlights by the thousand everywhere. Machine gun, anti-aircraft shells bursting everywhere. We flew down, about halfway down the Ruhr, and we were coned by one searchlight, and in a matter of a couple of seconds, another dozen had zoned in on us. So here we were, sitting duck, zoned by about a dozen searchlights. And, of course, you're blinded when that happens. We've been flying in the dark for the last hour and a half, so your eyes are all accompanied to you, with your pupils wide open. And we were coned, and I managed to get out of the cone by doing a violent, what known as a corkscrew, turning off the down, almost turned the aircraft on its back, and then a very fast move, and we got out of it. Went on to bomb our target. Then we went on leave. The other five crews came back, and we were sent on leave. And we returned a week later. Of the four RAF crews, only one was still with us.
Who put that?
The other three were all dead. It was just like that. And the two Dutch crews were still there, and one of the others was still there. I lost a very good friend who was from captain of one of the other aircraft. Mm-hmm. And anyhow, when I got back, I was on ops again, this time to a long flight. We did a lot of training, by the way. Mm-hmm. While we were you've heard of H2S, have you?
Vaguely, yes.
The radar device. Well, we were untrained in that. We didn't know how to use it because there were only all that were manufactured were being used on operations. There were none in the training stations that the navigator could be trained on. So we did a lot of training with H2S. And we also did fighter affiliation done in the daylight where you fly out and rendezvous with a Hurricane or a Spitfire, and he makes mock attacks on you and you have to evade them as you would do at night. Anyhow, at that point, the flight commander, a chap called Ricky Jarman, called me in. He says, are you interested in a commission, Madre? I said, yes. He said, okay, I'll arrange an interview with Spike Marsh. That was the name of the station commander, the squadron commander. Mm-hmm. And he said, he will arrange for an interview with the station commander, probably for the following day. But I was on ops that night to this place, Friedrichshafen, which was just north of Switzerland. It was actually the where they built the Graf Zeppelins that went down in flame in New York, what, about 1938? Well, those hangars that the Graf Zeppelins were built in were now producing armaments and such like. So the attack was at Friedrichshafen on the Graf Zeppelin things. Well, we still didn't know, my navigator still didn't know how to use his H2S properly. We hadn't had time. We'd been on the squadron 9 days. We arrived on the 18th, and this was the 27th. And we got down to, it was a long trip, took us all the way down to the south of England. Binbrook, by the way, is just south of Grimsby, south of the Humber. And we flew all the way down to cross the English coast at Portland Bill. And then out into the ocean about 100 miles, then a sharp left turn brought us to the south of the Ruhr. The idea was, of course, to confuse the Germans that we were going to the Ruhr so that they would concentrate their night fighters there, where we would make another turn and go on to Friedrichshafen. Well, about 20 minutes after we'd left the area of the Ruhr, my navigator comes on the phone, on the intercom, and says, I don't bloody well know where we are, Skip. I haven't had a fix for 30 minutes now. He said, I haven't got a bloody clue where we are. And he says, oh, great balls of fire. So I wasn't particularly worried, because when you're flying at night, there were about 500 aircraft all flying together in a long gaggle. So, as a pilot, I was continually being juggled by other people's slipstreams. As far as I was concerned, I wasn't worried because I knew that we were in the middle of a whole bunch of aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, 10 minutes later, after he'd made that statement, I told him to try and take an astro shot and see if he could pick anything up like that. All of a sudden, looking ahead, the ground was lit up with red flares, and I knew then that the pathfinders who were ahead of us had dropped their target markers, and I could see them. So I said to the navigator, I said, don't worry, the TIs, as we call them, have gone down, and we'll be bombing on that. So 15, 20 minutes later, we reached the target and then turned away. We got back to base, and this was my third trip now, full of confidence, know it all, debriefing. They asked me about the raid, and I said, oh, a lot of scarecrows. Well, scarecrow was an artillery shell which was fired up to about 20,000 feet, and then instead of bursting with metal, it dropped out a thing like a parachute, which would then float down, and it would be on fire, and it would look like an aircraft which had been shot down. Now, these were put up trying to demoralize the crews coming behind, that so many people were being shot down over the target.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, we identified all these as scarecrows. The intelligence officer said, well, said, I'm sorry to disillusion you, but of your flight of 9 aircraft, including your flight commander, only 6 have come back.
Okay.
So that was 42 guys in my flight.
Mm-hmm.
Hadn't returned from that. The following day, I had my interview, final interview for commission. I'll tell you a little bit about that because it's funny in a way. The station commander at Binbrook was one of the 3 most decorated people in the Air Force. Group Captain Huey Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
He already had a DSO, a DSC, I think he had 2 of each, and a Victoria Cross. He was one of 3. There was Huey Edwards, Cheshire, and Guy Gibson were the 3 most decorated airmen. So I had my interview with Huey, and I was told to polish my buttons before I went to see him. So I went in, just marched in, I should say, and having talked for a couple of minutes, he said, you salute all officers. No, sir. Why not? Well, I said, some of them are only bookkeepers. Oh. Okay, dismissed. I get about 50 yards outside of headquarters,
mm-hmm.
and there's a voice comes over the tannoy system. All ranks stand by for a message from the commanding officer. Well, we all stood there and waited. It has come to my knowledge that certain aircrew sergeants do not salute all officers contrary to Air Ministry regulations. I said to myself, well, that's the end of my commission. Anyhow, a couple of weeks later, my name was up on the battle order again, and I was on the battle order as pilot officer of Adbury. So, I was an officer now. Anyhow, I only did, after Friedrichshafen, I only did 2 more trips, Le Bruges and Le Clipon. They were both on the Normandy coast. And then I was posted. My crew and I were posted to 100 Squadron. What had happened, of course, was Australian crews had come through and filled up the vacancies with 460 Squadron, so they were moving out the RAF ones. And I was transferred to 100 Squadron at Waltham. Waltham was about 15, 20 miles away. The old Grimsby peacetime aerodrome. I'd no sooner got there, done the 2 or 3 just local flights around to get my bearings on the aerodrome, and I'm posted again. this time back to Bidenbrook. But not to the 460 Squadron, but to a special unit that was being formed to do what we call pathfinder duties. I went there at the beginning of June, and we started doing intensive training, which consisted of all the front of the aircraft windows were covered in blue plastic. It was completely covered in blue plastic. Now, I could see out to take off, but the moment we got airborne, I then had to put on some red goggles, which meant I couldn't see out of the aircraft at all. I had to do everything on instruments from then on. And the rest of the crew, of course, could all see, so it was up to them to watch out for any other aircraft. It was up to the bomb aimer to do the map reading. And we did this for 2 weeks, and we dropped dozens of bombs, practice bombs, on the bombing range. And then we didn't, of course, know that the D-Day was coming up. We had no idea.
Okay.
We just knew that we'd been told that we were on this special unit. Well, what actually had happened was this. They had formed an auxiliary, this little unit to do pathfinder duties. In other words, when I say pathfinder, do you understand what I mean by that? In other words, the pathfinders went ahead. They didn't carry bombs in their aircraft. They carried these flares, which when they hit the ground, could not be put out. I mean, if the Germans were there with a water tank, it wouldn't have made any difference. The flares still burned.
Mm-hmm.
And we were to be used in France only, marking strategic targets to stop the Germans moving towards Normandy. We didn't know this at the time. And we did another couple of trips with main force, because every aircraft was out on the day before the Normandy landings. Anyhow, then the first target that we were assigned to do, as I was assigned to do, as a pathfinder, was at Sante. It's on the Brest Peninsula, on the coast, and we were recalled from that because the weather had been reported as being duff in the air, so that was cancelled and we were recalled.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of nights later we went, and there were five of us went. I was what they called a lighter. In other words, my bomb bays were full of flares, and we had to drop these flares all together, and that would light up the area below, just like daylight. And the master bomber and the assistant master bomber would come in immediately behind us. The ground would be all alight, and they would drop the target indicators, and then they would call in main force to bomb the target. Well, the target was the marshalling yard at Sante, and the reason they wanted it that removed mm-hmm. was that there were trains of German troops moving north to get to where D-Day was, get to where the Normandy landings were,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted to put the marshalling yards out of commission for at least a week to hold those troops back so they couldn't get to Normandy. And it was quite amazing. We'd been flying for, I suppose, about 4 hours, hadn't seen another soul, right down to the south of England, right away, all below 2,000 feet, over the ocean, and we had to turn and find a river estuary, and then do a, what they call a time and distance run from the river estuary.
Okay.
You see, in other words, they picked a spot that would be visible from the air very clearly. A moonlight night,
mm-hmm.
The waters reflected the moon, so we had an exact spot. And then we were what they called a time and distance run of so many minutes to where that should bring us directly over the marshalling yard at Sante. And, as I say, we never saw another aircraft, we never felt another aircraft in the area, and all of a sudden, my bomb aimer dropped his flares, And they were in a long line like that, all tied together, one after the other. And there were three others, all dropped within 10 seconds of each other. And then the CO, Breakspear, called in main force to bomb the target, which they did. And we had the following day, after the PRU unit had been over, PRU means a photographic reconnaissance unit. They were Spitfires with no armaments on them, capable of enormous speed and very high altitude. The PRU people took a photograph of Sante, and 98% of all bombs were in the marshalling yard. Oh, big spread all over the papers in England. We thought, we thought, how clever we are.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that was my introduction into special duties thing.
Now I think we have to leave it here.
Oh,
today.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Sorry. I talk too much.
No, never. This means we'll have to come back and finish up
later. That's fine. Okay, that's just fine.